Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back to the podcast. My guest today is Brandon Fifield. He is the third member. Well, I wouldn't say third member, but he's the third podcast that I have done with members of the Alaska Wild Project. So it's not a ranking system, but thanks for being on here, man.
Hey, no worries. Yeah, I like to reference us as a tripod. So
that's perfect.
That's perfect. It takes three legs to keep it standing. So
yeah, I texted Daniel that when you three guys just kind of chat between you guys have such great stories and you guys play off each other so well, it's a pretty good listen. You guys feel like you're really catching your stride.
Yeah, we do, Jeff, and thanks for pointing that out. That's something that I think is a challenge. Anytime you get a new team together to accomplish a goal, the synergy and coming together is a challenge. And that's what makes it really cool. You can kind of get that figured out, but yeah, I'd say it's funny. We just recorded here a few days ago and we had some buddies come in the studio and one guy hadn't listened at all yet. And he just was, listening to it raw as it was transpiring. And one of the things he said was the difference in the personalities, the views, and just overall, styles, really is a kind of a good mix. I think it would be different if you just had three guys that were all like-minded or kind of the same views on things. We all have a different angle. And I think, that really benefits us in kind of creating a cool, unique conversation and how we cover our topics, I think.
Yeah. While you were talking about that, would you like your hunting buddies or fishing buddies, how is that important to have like attitudes or things that kind of complement each other when you're hunting? Because if you're going out hunting with a clone of yourself, that may or may not be a good thing. So how does that, how does that play?
Yeah, I would agree. I would never want to go hunting with just another me. That's for sure. No, I think it's important. And I think it takes a lot of time, to go out in the woods, with a group of guys. I think it takes time to figure out who or what their isms are, what my isms are. I think it's incredibly important because a lot of times you feed off of each other, good and bad, right? You can have a guy who's got a kind of a funky attitude one day and he kind of makes everybody feel a certain way, or you can have a guy who's feeling upbeat and good and some other guy's not having good days and it makes the day better and or the situation, whatever it is. But I think the team dynamic and the connection you have with your partners out in the woods is really important because number one, you're looking out for each other's safety and well-being, right? So you gotta have that, looking out, covering each other's back. And then two, when it's time to make a decision, what do you think? Should we make this place? Should we go up this mountain? Should we go down here? And to be able to feed off of each other and share each other's opinions and ideas to ultimately make a decision, I think is important. And that comes with time. I don't think you can just go hunting with somebody one time and get that figured out or go out in the woods, camping, whatever it is. But I think it's incredibly important. And I think it ultimately leads to success if you can have a good connection with your partners when you're out there, because ultimately you're going to most likely make the best decision that's going to be beneficial to everybody, you know?
Yeah. What do you bring to the table as far as like gear and stuff wise? Dan and I were talking about toys. And
yeah,
do you have the jet boat and some of the ATV and some of those big toys?
Yeah. I do. I've been very fortunate enough in my life, here in Alaska, I've really worked very hard, you know, to acquire all the Alaskan toys. I mean, I think as most of us Alaskans know, if you really, really want to get out and enjoy this wild, great place, you do need the equipment. And you can do it by foot and get so far. But if you want to get out and do some stuff up in the rivers and lakes and oceans and things like that, you got to have a boat. You got to have an ATV or an airboat or a plane or something. And I do. I'm kind of like the buddy with the jet boat. I got the buddy with the salt boat. I just went out with him yesterday. He's been my guy to go out with. He's had boats over the years, but he just upgraded to a really, really nice boat recently. And so I'm kind of the jet boat guy. I do have a crew that we get together every year and do a moose hunt that requires the jet boat to get us where we need to go. And I'm heavily relied upon annually to make sure we can get out to that area with the use of that equipment. So I would say my specialty in terms of what I bring to the table in a group going on a hunt or an adventure is the jet boating or the boating skill set. And it's just a good piece of equipment that does the job. Mm-hmm. But as far as like, you know, doing a backpack hunt or something like that, you know, I'm the guy that has the TP tent, so no one else has to bring it.
Nice.
You know what I mean? So there are some certain things that I have that maybe another guy doesn't have or doesn't need to bring. But there's some things that I don't have that other guys have, which is nice because then you don't have to invest in that piece of equipment because you know your buddy has it and you're going to be going out with him anyway. So I think there are some certain things that I do bring to the table in certain circumstances.
Yeah, some of that stuff, it's you want to share stuff with buddies, but at the same time, when sometimes I'm hesitant to borrow someone's stuff, man. Because I want to break it. Like usually my friends they're the types of people who wouldn't care if you did. It's not they're going to make you feel guilt or anything like that. It's just kind of, oh man, like I appreciate you offering me that, but I got to decline because I'm just too afraid of, you know, what if I break it? And I know you say it's no problem, but I would just feel terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I'm definitely the one that doesn't like to borrow. I mean, I'll go out of my way to purchase a piece of equipment just so that I don't have to borrow it. And it's a personal thing. It makes me feel better about it. And there are a few guys that I would say, I would be willing to let borrow some of my equipment, knowing that they would, number one, that they would treat it the exact same way, if not better than I would a field. And in the event something got broken, lost or damaged, that they would be able to compensate or take care of it and knowing that. But I'm with you on that, man. If I can avoid borrowing something, especially something very expensive, like an ATV, a trailer, boat. Yeah. I'm not going to ask anybody to borrow their stuff. And I think too, at this day and age where I'm at in my adulthood with my buddies and friends and my people, we've all kind of gotten to that place where we know what we can ask to borrow and not to ask to borrow.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really come up that often anymore, I guess. So
yeah. So you went down to Prince William Sound the last couple of days. Your Instagram story, it looked like it was a 26, 28 foot kingfisher. Was that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Oh man, those are so nice. Were out.
Oh man, it was awesome, man. Yeah, he just picked that boat up. You know, he had been running some other boats. He had a 22 foot Thunder jet boat for a little bit, then got rid of that, and then got a 22 foot Weldcraft Ocean King, which he had for a few years. Got us out deer hunting, halibut fishing, bear hunting, did all kinds of cool stuff with that. Then he moved up to a 24 foot Hughescraft for 2 years, same scenario, fishing, hunting, you know, enjoyed the crap out of that boat. And then, you know, ultimately he wanted something that he could go camping in with his family and have the accommodations. And so he worked his way up to getting that 28 foot Explorer, that Kingfisher Explorer.
Dang.
Or is it the Weekender? I can't remember which one it is, but man, Jeff, that thing was sweet, dude. It was nice, man.
What do you run? What do you have for an ocean boat?
I don't actually have a salt boat. And that's what I mentioned before, you know, I got the buddy with the salt boat,
okay,
so I don't have to buy it, but you know, I'm the guy that's definitely willing to pitch in whatever amount for fuel, bait, any maintenance stuff. And, you know, I feel like the best of both worlds is that I don't have to own the boat and deal with all the maintenance, but I'm down to throw in on the fuel. yeah. And then get to go out. But no, I personally have a 21 foot Jetcraft Extreme Shallow, okay. which is a inboard 200 horse motor on that, and it's an open bow center console unit, which is pretty cool. I can take the seats out of it, and I put a four wheeler or meat wagons and some equipment in there to do our hunt every year. So I don't have the salt boat, but I do have the jet boat situation locked down that gets us out and does what we need to do.
Yeah. I had a 15 foot Boston Whaler skiff, and it was fun to just kind of go around and set some crab pots, shrimp pots, do a little bit of trolling from it. But I upgraded to a 21 foot, North River. It's got a canvas top. It's kind of an older boat. Yep. It has the canvas top, but oh my gosh, just that, the space being dry, especially when it's cold, you know, making those steelhead runs. It's so nice to be dry. And now I got a buddy who just bought a brand new Hughescraft. It's about the same size, but it's a hard top. I'm thinking, oh man, that's the one.
That's the one.
But I bought mine used, and so it was a lot cheaper. Yep. And so it's like, gosh, you know, like there's some comforts and luxuries that come with his brand new boat, but there's also a massive payment. So that's kind of that trade-off. Once you see someone else's toys and you think, oh my gosh, that'd be so nice to have one of those. But then the maintenance and the cost and everything, it's kind of tough.
Oh man. Well, and that saltwater game is like, what's the limit, right? I mean, you can get that easy, you know, you've got the 20, 21 foot North River. You and your wife can handle that at the dock, right? Like, it's not a huge boat. You can dry dock it. It's very versatile. However, it's limited in terms of what it can handle for seas and that kind of thing, gets you out of the weather. One thing that, you know, to consider with that, like, we just came in last night. We didn't get back to Anchorage until midnight, right? Put his big 28 foot boat in the driveway, got all our stuff out of there. And I said, hey man, what can I help you get unloaded or whatever? He's like, oh, I'll have to deal with it later. And you know, when we leave now, he has to deal with all that stuff with that boat, the cleaning, the washing, the unloading, all of this stuff. And that's the thing, he has to take on that responsibility. I obviously offer, when time allows, to go and help him wash and maintenance and do whatever he needs just to be a good boat partner with him. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot more responsibility, work and stuff that comes into every time you upgrade that bigger boat or that bigger whatever. There's more work and more responsibility involved. So you got to really know what you're getting into when you accept that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. So what's
a lot goes into it.
What's next on your toy list? There has to be something
next on my toy list, man. Yeah, dude. We were trying to get a camper this year, and we opted out on that. The camper situation, to try and purchase one down south and come back up, was a bummer because of Canada. So we ended up purchasing, as a family, my wife and I, we purchased a four-seater side-by-side. So we just got that, got a new trailer, adjusted to the new payments for that stuff, and kind of got ourselves in a groove there. So we've got basically a whole new exploration and opportunity for adventures that is actually great because it extends out to the family and being able to take all the kids and everybody out. So right now we're kind of adjusting to, you know, planning around and doing trips with that, and obviously going to use that for hunting and stuff too. But that right now is kind of where we're just going to hang out. We're not looking to spend any more money or purchase any more stuff. I mean, I would love right now, my next, if I could say I had the money and I was going to go purchase something right now, I really love a property and a cabin. That's what I really ultimately want next.
Yeah,
that's kind of like my next level too. I like to use the word Alaska rich, and people ask me, what does that mean? And it doesn't mean rich as in money. It means rich as in whatever you do to obtain loving life in Alaska. And that's Alaska rich to me. So what I would love to have is a nice little piece of property in the woods with a cabin that me and my family can go out to occasionally and enjoy to get away from the hustle and bustle of the fast life of raising kids and work and, you know, bills and all that stuff. And so that's kind of what I'm really looking to achieve next.
Yeah. I've been looking at property too. And like, my wife and I don't even have a house yet. So we're looking at, you know, if she gets a job in Ketchikan to, you know, buy some land and then build like what you want. The housing market in Ketchikan is kind of tough right now. Like there's some houses that are kind of within the price range, but you know, I don't want to have to put on a new roof in 2 years. I don't have to redo the deck. I don't want a project. I want a home. So I'd rather just a couple live. Of buddies who are, yeah. who are builders and just, this is what we want, right? We don't even want a lot. We don't want a lot of empty space, just a place where we can, you know, just a nice house and then a garage. That's kind of the key thing. And then a little bit of space, you know, she wants to do raised bed gardens and we want to have either a view or, you know, we can go out the back of our property and we can be hunting, something like that. But, I've also just for the fun of it or the depressingness of it, looked at some land that's for sale in like the Mat-Su Valley and around, and you can get like quite a bit. Like I'm not going to do it at all, but, you know, just that daydream. And, you know, there are some cabins that are out there and there's also acreage that's available. But then, like, I don't know how you get to some of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it requires a boat or four-wheelers, or even a lot of it's just fly-in access. And that's where the more cost-effective properties are going to be, where it's just tougher to get to. And I would say, like you mentioned, Ketchikan's housing market's tough. I mean, right now in South Central Alaska, it is insane as far as, you know, people are purchasing houses sight unseen, paying upwards of $40,000 above asking prices cash to purchase homes right now. That's how ridiculous the market is. And as you extend north into Wasilla, where you would normally get a better deal because it's 40 miles out of town, you have to commute if you work in Anchorage. Even those homes right now and properties are going for almost Anchorage type prices. So I would say to anybody, man, maybe if you can be patient and just kind of let this kind of high do its thing. And at some point I'd like to believe it's going to settle back down and hopefully some of these prices will come back down to a more realistic range. Cause right now it's just kind of absurd.
Yeah. It's absolutely crazy.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Well, yeah, hopefully by the time, you know, we figure stuff out, you know, things will be settling back and it might even be, you know, viable to build, because right now it's not even close. Like a year ago, year and a half ago, when we were starting to think about this, just no way. And we're really glad that we didn't try to overextend ourselves and say, well, you'll probably get a job, so let's buy and let's build. And then, you know, all of a sudden the prices go up and everything. So it's, yeah, I think it's good to patient, see how things work out and then go. But, I'm right there
That's
with
a
you,
good
man.
Move.
If you could have like 20, 30, 50 acres tucked back in somewhere, if you're, a little moose hunting camp. And
you're making me smile just saying that right now.
Man, well, I was looking at some of these properties on X, and you can see, like, if you don't have any of the property boundaries on it, you just look at just massive expanse. It looks like low wetlands, just looks unbelievably moosey. And then you look at property, and there's tons of people have bought a lot of these properties and these little, you know, it's all sectioned off. It looks like a nice little cul-de-sac that's, you know, what, 50 years maybe from actually coming to fruition. Well, maybe less than that. Who knows, with everybody moving up. But it's crazy. And it's kind of sad because, you know, the people who can afford to do that or can afford to, I'm going to buy these 40 acres, I'm going to put in an airstrip, and I'm going to be able to fly out there and enjoy it. You know, that's not a high school teacher. That's not what they're doing.
No, most of them, no, they're not. And it blows me away, honestly. I'm a blue collar guy, man. I'm a blue collar guy, hard worker. I'm by no means, up there as far as that goes. You know, I'm very grateful and fortunate for what I've been able to do for my life and my career and my family. But it blows me away, truly. Just even out yesterday and the day before in Prince William Sound, just the expense of the equipment. I mean, you see all these brand new boats out there, and Jeff, these are like $180,000 to $300,000 boats, and these guys are towing them with $80,000 trucks, and I'm like, where in the hell are all these people coming up with all this money? Because, I mean, they're figuring it out, and kudos and power to them, man, but like, where in the hell are you getting, like, how do you get that stuff?
I know. It's crazy. There was a boat for sale in Ketchikan. It's by the Walmart. It's a beautiful, beautiful, I don't know, it looks 26, 28 foot. It's a walk around. Oh, just a beautiful looking boat for $175 without power.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah. $175 for a beautiful new boat, but then you got a, I don't know, you probably at two 225s at least on it, and then a kicker.
Oh, like, yeah.
That's just, I mean, that's just crazy.
Another 50,000. Yeah, no, it is crazy. I mean, I it's great. You know, it's cool to see people, especially with the pandemic and the weird stuff that was going on. A lot more people were still, they had money to buy toys and do what they needed to do. And it's good for all of our local, you know, markets and these businesses that are, they're in the business selling boats and toys and motors and all these things. It's cool, you know, it's good for that, but it just still blows me away, like, where these people come up with the abilities to buy all these airplanes and properties and boats. And yeah, it's just, it's pretty wild, because I've worked my tail off to get what I have, and I'm not even nearly at the level some of these people are, but, you know, power to them, I guess.
Yeah. It's crazy to me as well, because that stuff really stacks up, and you start thinking about, you know, you really hope that people aren't overextending themselves and, you know, buying stuff on credit, not putting money away for college retirement, stuff like that. But man, it's pretty crazy. Do you have any shortages of things? I know it's almost impossible to get a Yamaha outboard down here and a kicker. Like, that's just not, the guy was saying that he would put in an order for it and it might be 6 months, but it could be up to a year just to get a kicker.
Oh man, that's brutal. Well, you guys are pretty limited on dealers and vendors in that area, right?
Yeah, we have a dealer.
yeah. Well, if you're looking for a Yamaha, you can go to, you know, three or four different vendors and dealers here in South Central, so there's a better option. However, like my buddy Daniel, he just put in the order for the 6x6 Can-Am, and I think he said 6 months to a year before he may get that.
Dang.
So yeah, so I mean, you go, like, we just purchased our new side-by-side back in April. They had two on the floor. Me being the procrastinator that I am, I told my wife, well, let's hold off and think about it and see if we can find a used one. And she's like, the hell with that, I'm pulling the trigger right now. If we come back here on Friday, this thing's gonna be sold. Sure enough, they sold all their units by the middle of the next week. So we would have been SOL had we not done it. And it's just, it's insane. It's just something weird going on right now in the world where just stuff's just getting bought up and it's super expensive. And yes, there is a shortage of stuff. And hopefully this stuff settles down, because, man, years ago, you could go into anywhere and find anything you need at any time in stock. And now it's like unheard of that that's even an option anymore.
Yeah. I wonder if it's within a year or two, you're going to have people who bought stuff because of, you know, there's just kind of a panic buy and I need to feel I'm being released from COVID, so I'm going to buy this stuff, and they are not using it. So you can get some used deal on something with very low mileage. I wonder if that's going to be the case, or if it's just going to be, you know, this neck breaking pace of buying and being short on everything.
Oh, sounds like you're cutting out there, Jeff. Can you hear me?
Oh, really? Dang. Yeah. No, yeah, I got you. I went on a nice little soliloquy there. Yeah.
I know, we're doing really good. I looks like I got pretty good cell phone reception here too. I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you there. I do believe in the next few years, I think there's going to be an incredible influx of, you know, ATVs, trailers, campers, you know, boat motors, things that people purchased with the intent of, oh, I'm going to get out and do this stuff. And then they're going to get sucked back into their routines of life. And then they're going to realize they don't have the time. Or they just realize that, wow, it's actually a lot of work to have fun. I don't really want to go through all that. And then you're going to see a huge influx of this stuff going on the market. I really do believe there's going to be a lot of stuff for sale in the next maybe 18 months to 2 years. We're going to see a whole lot of stuff out there available for sale. I do believe that.
Yeah. I might benefit from that, but it is pretty sad just to see people that have, you know, dreams, aspirations, they're, you know, they want to make a better life. It's the whole, you know, New Year's Eve or New Year's resolution thing, you know, where people really want, they're sick of what they were getting and they want to do better. And man, you just hope they do, just for the sake of, you know, them and the people around them and their kids and everything. But Yep. Now, oftentimes it doesn't really work out, or it doesn't work out the way they plan it. That's kind of sad.
Yeah, it can be for sure.
I think that's one of the reasons why, like working for it, you appreciate it so much more. Like you said, you know, the blue collar, just working guys like you, there's that sacrifice. Yep. If I were to like win the lottery, and sometimes I talk about it with like my students, and Mr. Lone, what'd you do if you won $1 billion? I said, well, I don't know. I'd have to figure out what I would do with money. And then also what you do with the time, because everyone else still works. Right. So unless I wanted to say, hey, Rob, you don't have to work anymore. You know, be my friend. Then you like build this posse of people that you're supporting. It's just weird. And you lose that sacrifice. If I can just fly down to Australia and hunt and fish, there's no sacrifice. There's no saving. There's no, I don't know. It would be different. I would probably like to try it.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah. I feel like when you are a working man or a working woman, you really can't just stop doing that. You know, I've been asked that question too. What I do is I probably buy a business and keep myself busy somehow. Yeah. You know what I mean? Now, I would say, honestly, I could keep myself busy just playing in the woods. Yeah. All right. I could do that full time easily. But like anything, I don't say it gets old, but it gets to a point where you got to make adjustments or whatever. So, I'm with you there. And that sacrifice is just what it is. You know what I mean? You got to work. You got to pay your bills. You got to do what you got to do. And for me, it's, you know, it's family, friends, career, you know, play outside. Those are kind of, it's just easy to stay focused on that and keep plugging away.
Yeah. You definitely got to have a feeling of purpose. That's one of the things why people are so sad, lonely, whatever. They don't feel like there's a purpose thing in their life. And whether that's, you know, the outreach, I talked about this with Daniel a little bit, just being part of the community and being connected to other people and having that purpose that you're not just someone who fell through the cracks or, you know, things could be just as good, if not better, without you. And that's just a terrible thing to be feeling. Man, I sound depressed today, but I'm actually in a really good mood.
No, it's good to bring that up. And I think, you know, the sooner folks figure out that, you know, that that's going on in their lives. And that's one of the cool things that we really feel great about with what we're doing with our podcast and just our general, you know, I guess you said purpose, is to shed light on the community and get folks motivated to get out and enjoy their backyard. And obviously we want our listeners, you know, internationally and nationally and all over the place to listen to us. But, a lot of times I feel like my feelings about it is I hope that there's local people in our state, in our communities listening to this going, man, you know, I really need to get out and try that. Or I need to really go over and check out that park or that hike or that campground. And ultimately, you know, if you're living a lifestyle here in Alaska and you're not enjoying what you have in your backyard, you're missing out. And I think there's a lot that can be said for the quality of life improvement by getting out of your house, getting out of your bubble, going out in the woods, swatting away on the mosquitoes, jumping in a boat, hiking up a mountain, you're riding a mountain bike, whatever it is that you do, man, it really, in my opinion, it drastically improves your lifestyle, your mental, your physical health, you know, getting that fresh air, man. There's just a lot of really good things that come from it that you just don't really know the benefits until you get out and start doing it. And I really encourage people to get out there, man. It's just a incredible improvement in an overall daily life if you can get out and enjoy this place. I really feel that way.
Yeah, that's well said. Yep. Well, so what's like your entertainment radius or your outdoor radius? If you're like, if you head north, east and south, you can't really drive west from where you're at.
Not really.
But what's kind of the radius of entertainment? If you're going north a couple hours, you don't have to be specific as the people might say, oh, he goes 2.5 hours north. That's Caribou. So that's in this section. But what was your entertainment radius?
My entertainment radius really ranges everywhere from, I don't get to fly out as much as I'd like. Man, there's a lot of expense to that. So my I've been limited there. But my radius is pretty much anywhere all the way north to the Brooks Range, where I've done some backpack hunts up there, all the way down to, you know, the Kenai Peninsula. I less frequent the peninsula lately over the last maybe 5 years, just because of the pure mass of people that go down during the summer, I've kind of limited myself to playing around in the Kenai as much. But man, I really love going, you know, north all the way up through, you know, whether it be Cantwell, Talkeetna. Talkeetna is one of my favorite places to go, all the way up, like I said, through Fairbanks to the Brooks Range. What I really, really, really love doing, I love going northeast. So I love to go up north of Palmer, Glen Allen, you know, cut up toward Delta Junction, up into Fairbanks, and down into Valdez and Copper Center, Gakona, Chostachina, a lot of those areas, man. I love going out there. In fact, my wife and I just celebrated an anniversary here in June, and we went out to Paxson Lake. You know, a lot of people would think, man, why the heck would you want to go 4 hours away to go camping? And, you know, it was quiet. There wasn't a lot of people. We were just her and I, we were able to ditch the kids, took the jet boat out, killed the lake trout, you know, went fishing. I don't mind telling people that. Everybody should go check that out. Not everybody's going to drive 4 hours up there. It's a long way. A lot of the things that I tell people to do, I know they're most likely not going to do it because it's a lot of work, effort, sacrifice to like get out and go do these things. And so you're only going to get a small percentage of people that are actually going to do it. But I love those areas. And man, I pretty much am all over the place in Alaska during the summer and even in the wintertime, you know, get out and ride and go ice fishing and that kind of thing. So yeah, I hope that answers the question.
No, that's good. I
get all over the place.
I get a little bit jealous being from Southeast because we don't have a road system. So it's pretty much my adventure radius is a lot smaller because it's more, you know, based on where I can go with a boat. But the same sort of thing happens is that some people don't want to go quite as far. And I'm actually one of those people right now, you know, only having a 21-foot boat versus some of my buddies who have, you know, 28-foot boat. And like the gas is so much more. But you can there's a whole bunch of coves and inlets and things like that you can just get a little bit away and just anchor on a beach. You don't have to go super far, but it's just so nice to get out. And it's so different. When I lived in California, you'd go out to a spot and it would be a couple hours to go to this cool spot. But on the way back in, there was so much traffic that it kind of like wound you back up. You had that nice release of getting out somewhere, but on the way back in, it kind of, you know, put you back in the hole there. So it's nice to be in areas where you're coming back refreshed. So it may have been a long run to get back or a long drive to get back, but you know, you still are riding that relaxation and that decompression or that whatever you went out there to get.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. I do notice that, and I never actually thought of it that way, Jeff. So now that you said that, I'll probably never forget it. That, you know, like what I just said, my wife and I went all the way up there, right? That run up that highway is pretty quiet. You know, most folks at that time of year are starting to head south, and so you get up in that direction. And right now there aren't as many tourists as there normally would be as far as tour buses and motorhomes and stuff. The highway would normally be busier, but it was quiet. Well, you know, the second we rolled into Palmer and then, you know, hit the hay flats on the Glen Highway, it was like back to the traffic, started talking about, okay, what do we got to do tomorrow? You know, and then it was like, oh man, that didn't last very long.
Yeah.
The disconnect kind of reconnects real fast when you're doing that. But I was going to say, man, I think not knowing the Southeast as well as a guy like yourself would, I was fortunate enough through some years of my career as an insurance adjuster, as an independent property damage appraiser, I was able to travel frequently to Juneau, Ketchikan. I've been out to Klohok. I've been out to Hoona. I've been out to some of those Southeast villages. And I always felt very, very envious of you guys that, you know, were out there. I remember I went to Craig and I went to go look at a vehicle and I met the guy that was like the principal and teacher, but then he kind of had a summer thing and I can't remember his name. It was probably well over 10 years ago now. But when I went down and met this guy, I was so envious. They had just talked about how they went dip netting and harvested a bunch of reds and him and his father-in-law were going to go out and harvest a bunch of deer for meat for the winter. And I was like, oh my God, man, these guys are living the life. You know, there's that like true, like urban slash, and now Craig's pretty remote, but versus a Ketchikan or something there, you got some more amenities. But man, I mean, for me, I know I can get out and enjoy the outdoors, but I mean, really, 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 the outdoors are right in your guys' backyard, man.
Yeah.
You guys have it right there, 10 minutes away. And I've always been very envious of you guys and what you're able to do. And I'm sure it has its limitations, but I'll tell you what, man, if you wanted to trade lifestyles for a year, I'd be down, man.
Was it,
experience something different.
Was it Chuck Hansen?
Chuck Hansen, man. I do not remember his name, okay. Jeff. Super nice guy. I imagine he was down there doing it a while. I mean, he was like the main principal of the war. I think that school is like the only school for the whole community of kids, I think.
Yeah.
Down there.
Yeah. I grew up in Klawak. And so,
okay.
The, like my parents' friends, I just saw all the teachers had different lives. Like they all fished and they all hiked and a couple of them were charter guides during the summer. And so it was,
yep.
You know, the whole idea that, oh, your teacher just appears when they turn the lights on in the school never occurred to me. And so that stereotype would just seem so weird. And it just seems so natural to have a life outside your job. And so growing up, it's just what I saw. And I thought, this is how you do it. Okay. These people are happy. Yep. Why are they happy? Well, they love their job, but then they also love what they do outside of work.
Yeah.
And it just seems so natural to be able to, you know, the better you are showing up to work, the better you're going to be at work.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911, and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
If your life sucks outside of work, then oh my gosh, like how can, it's great to love your job, no question about it, and feel purpose in your job, but you know, you got to have that life too. And so yeah, Klawak was a cool place to grow up in. Ketchikan's nice, a little bit bigger, and it's great. But I am jealous of the road system, man. I would love to drive up into the Brooks.
Well, a guy who enjoys the fruits of our you know, ability to get out in the woods, it's, you would definitely love it out here too. You would find lots and lots and lots of things to do, I'm sure. Just like we would love the adjustment of, you know, being able to go out and deer hunt and steelhead fish and, you know, the closer proximity to salmon and halibut and those kinds of things. But man, and we mentioned this before, you ever make your way up here and you want to get out with us, man, we'd be happy to hook up with you and plan something and go play, man. And that we'd love to hook up with you and do something like that. So.
Yeah. That'd be that moose hunt, man. Sounds great. Like that's one of the things that I've really, I went up to Fairbanks for the 40 mile March Cull the Herd hunt. And that was pretty fun. It was pretty chilly, but you know, we don't have caribou down here. Then got a brown bear, which was cool. And I'm going to go after some.
Was that
goats.
This year?
Yeah.
Did you just get that bear?
Yeah.
Okay. I saw that on your Instagram. I wondered, I was like, man, I looked at it like maybe like a few weeks before and I didn't see that. And so I thought maybe you got a bear. Did you get that down there too?
Yeah. I had a buddy who's got a boat and he's kind of got it figured out, but you have to go, you know, you're a couple hours from town, you know, it's just on the boat. It's not, you can't drive to any of that stuff cause we don't have brown bear on the island. So definitely a different program. So it, you know, really had to work for it, which is pretty fun. But you know, moose and caribou, like those are on the list for sure. And dall sheep, of course.
Right. Yeah. And I guess, you know, where you're at, that's just not happening, right? You're not close enough in the mainland areas that you can actually go find that stuff. And I guess we take that for granted, Jeff. You know, we're up here in South Central. We have access to all the, you know, interior, South Central and Eastern portions and of Alaska via the road system. And so a guy can definitely access some good moose hunting or good, decent moose hunting. And of course the caribou is really probably one of the easier access with unit 13 being a huge unit and the Nelchina herd running through there. In fact, my daughter, my 12-year-old daughter drew for the second time, the youth, caribou tag in unit 13, which allows us to go hunt from August 1st to August 5th. And it's just for kids. That 5 days. And we're really super excited that actually we're ramping up and getting geared up for that trip right now. And again, those are those things that we have that, you know, we have the benefit of being, I mean, you could put in for the permit down there too, of course, and then, you know, work your way up and do a hunt or whatever. But it is nice to just be 3 hours away from that area to get to go hunt that. So.
Yeah. Did they shut that down at some point for non-federally qualified? Or was that for moose or?
You know, I don't know the details on that. I do know for sure as of right now that Youth Hunt is still open. And a lot of times they don't mess with the youth hunts and closures as much, just because of the limited amount of permits that are given out and then the limited amount of hunters that are going to go afield to harvest the animals. But yeah, I'm not sure exactly about that, Jeff. I'd have to maybe look into that.
Yeah, sure. I'd heard, you know, I mean, it's such a big state. And so if you're local in one area, this is like your big thing. But if you're not, if that's not right in your area, it can be hard to forget. But I thought I heard something, because I know up on the North Slope where they were trying to make that non, like you couldn't even go there to hunt if you weren't federally qualified. Whereas in some areas, they just kind of limit the non federally qualified. But yeah, I can't imagine they would mess with kids, but.
Yeah, and I highly doubt that hunt in particular. I mean, I could see him messing with the subsistence side on that, with the tier one, but as far as I know, we're a full go on that. So
nice. Yeah, that would be the worst thing ever. Tell the kids, you can't do it anymore. Like, what's
that would be a bummer. I mean, but I've also taught my daughter, you know, being that she's coming of that age where she can start to understand not only the hunting, the preparation, the respect, the, you know, the value of the resource, all those things we're teaching her and our other children, those values, but also starting to look at the, you know, the regulation, the rules, how it is that she even got this permit and why it's even available to her. We've been starting to have some of those conversations, and as she gets older and starts to develop the capacity to kind of soak in that stuff, we'll certainly start pushing some more of that information on her and learning how to do that. Cause I can tell you, when I was 12 years old, man, I was already reading the hunting regulations. I was already getting in there and trying to figure stuff out and asking my dad questions and things like that. But, you know, there's just a lot of information there, but
yeah. And it is changing, and, you know, there has to be some level of regulation. You know, we can't just have, it can't just be open season. You know, we're seeing the results of that and unchecked predators. Yeah. You know, the 40 mile herd is such a great example of recovery because of in the 90s when they made more of a concerted effort to cull the wolves that allowed, you know, the herd to come back, and then having the quota hunts and then having the winter one rather than have all the quota in summer when people are just going to be tearing up the tundra with four wheelers and whatnot, you know, have it during the winter when there's going to be snow on top there. Just like some great thinking, like these biologists, like, hey, what's going to be actually best for this area here? And it's such a difficult job for them to try to figure out, you know, population densities and how many there are, but they do the best they can. It's just a matter of kind of following through with that and being good stewards of it.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jeff. I try to be careful about what I say about the department. I think all in all, they do a really, really good job. I think their agenda is to conserve the resource for all of us for the future. I really believe that's their goal. And, you know, some things, obviously, we all disagree with certain things that they do and don't do or whatever. But I would say, all in all, they're making a concerted effort to do what's best for the future of our wildlife and our areas and the landscape of things. And I'm overall pretty supportive of everything that they do, and appreciate all that they do that gives us, the people, the locals, the opportunity to do this stuff and the opportunity for our children. And, you know, I hope when my kids are grown and I'm a grandpa and they start having kids that all this stuff is still available then and even to their generations later. I really hope that.
Yeah. It's got to be tough too when they make their recommendations, then it's undercut either by, you know, an administration or the feds or something like that. It's like, well, I'm here. This is the science of it. But then, okay, we'll do something else. But that's for.
Yeah. And it's all about the money too, right?
Yeah.
Like, is there money available for funding for it? So there's that variable as well.
It's crazy.
It is.
So in your last podcast, or I think it was maybe the second to last, that you guys were talking about just how, you know, you're burning the candle at both ends when you're in Alaska. Like, you don't have time to do anything but the thing. Like, you're out fishing, you're hunting, you're scouting, you're doing everything right now. So what's next on the list?
Oh man, that's the old running gun, man. Running and gunning. That's what our little quote we call it. Let's see next. You know, I actually did really good about kind of taking things easy here in July, just so that there's some more opportunity to be spontaneous and not have everything so strictly scheduled. The next real adventure that we have on the books right now and that we're prepping for is that youth hunt that we're going to go on for my daughter. You know, that opens on the 1st. So we want to actually depart on the 30th so we can get to where we want to camp. And then the 31st, we want to get out and do a little scouting around and looking for some critters and seeing where they're at. And if we're lucky enough to find what we're looking for, hopefully get out there the next day on the opening day or the day after and hopefully get a harvest in. So we're working on that. And then pretty much 2 weeks right after that, I've got a relative that was able to obtain a antlerless moose permit in a particular area that we're hoping that we can go back. Number one, see if we can go get him a moose, but we also want to go back and look for some sheep.
Nice.
So we're really excited about that. That is basically a 12 to 14 day where I took some time off of moose hunting that I would have in September, and I applied it to that to make what would normally be like an 8 to 10 day sheep hunt that we would do annually, and shifted it to a 10 to 12 day, well, more 12 to 14 day, I guess, antlerless moose slash sheep kind of scouting mission. Maybe get lucky enough to find something. We'll see. Kind of going into a new area we've never been, so it's pretty exciting for that. So we wanted to allot some time for that. But all this stuff is kind of happening back to back to back, so there's going to be a lot of work to get this stuff scheduled. So I've got the youth hunt, the moose slash sheep hunt in mid-August. Come back. Normally we're gone for Labor Day to go moose hunting, but we've shifted that back. So we're actually looking forward to a big, huge family final camping trip blowout where we go out to a buddy's property out in Big Lake area, which is just north of Wasilla, and then do a big thing at the Alaska State Fair. We're going to take all the kids and families and go do a big day at the fair. That'll be fun. And then I did a lot 5 days toward the end of the season where coincidentally my lucky little daughter of mine also drew a Annie Bull moose permit.
Ooh, nice.
in an area that basically I can get back into with the boat, and so we're going to go do some scouting around for that, and hopefully if we can find a nice area, maybe find some moose and set up a camp. I've got about a 5 to 7 day window toward the end of the moose hunting season. Maybe we can get into the rut there when things are hot and heavy and bust off and go out there and do maybe a 5 to 7 day moose hunt. So those are kind of the main things that I've got on my docket, I guess, coming up. I pretty much ran through a lot of my pre-scheduled adventures that we had during the summer. And this July, just for this part of the rest of this season, I really wanted to just kind of chill. I've got some stuff in house projects that I've been putting off all of May and June out playing, things that need to get done. And honestly, just to rest up a little bit, because it's been absolutely chaos, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like running on 4 hours of sleep every night for some reason, just constantly going and going and going. But that's just the Alaska fast life, man.
Yeah.
That's just kind of the way it goes when you're out doing this kind of stuff. So
it's like the body knows. The body knows that, hey, we're going to rest in the winter. You know, we got to do this now.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like it's like we live like bears, man. We just get out and we harvest and play and run around, and we're all over the place, and then we go nestle up in our den for the winter, you know?
Yeah.
So
is there I know there's a limited archery only moose in town Fairbanks. Is there a tag like that for Anchorage where you can hunt some of those?
Nice. Yeah. There are some great, great hunting opportunities for multiple units. I know in unit 16 and 14, I'd have to double check the regs. I believe it does open on August 20th for general season harvest ticket moose for bow only, of course, which, you know, sounds exciting. You go get bow certified, you go hit the archery range for the off season, and come August 20th, man, or maybe it might be August 10th. There's like a short window. I want to say like a 10 day window, man. Don't quote me. I'm kind of all over the place. I have to double check the regs. I remember looking this stuff up years ago and getting excited about it. And then I went out with a guy on a hunt one time, and realize how hard it really is
to
try and hunt moose in August when everything is still green and lush,
full
foliage, can't see anything. The moose have zero interest in calling, grunting. There's zero rut. You know what I mean? It's kind of like you have to be in the right place at the right time. But to answer your question, man, there is some really killer opportunities. However, it is incredibly challenging to get a moose that time of year, especially with a bow.
Yeah.
So, but there are guys that do it, man. Do you follow 149 West?
I do not. 149 West? No. Get on.
Yeah,
the
check
old...
those boys out, man. They are badass dudes. They are a bunch of young guys. I think they're sponsored by Kuyu. They've got a bunch of really cool photos of hunts that they go and do. It looks like those guys are getting into some areas where they kill a bunch of moose that are fully velveted, and it looks like they use bow, and they get a bunch of bears and catch monster halibut. Those guys are getting after it. But
nice.
Check them out, man. They've got some really cool content where they've taken down quite a few big moose with velvet and bows, and so they're definitely doing something kind of cool and different.
Nice. Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of these hunts like seem like they'd be awesome, but they're so difficult. Like it's almost.
Oh man.
Like, good luck.
Yeah, and your guys' landscape with that rainforest is obviously got its challenges in terms of thick brush. We joke around; we call it Vietnam. You know, like you think I'm just going to jump off the boat or jump off the road and I'm going to go hike up to the Alpine and I'll get up there in a couple hours. Like, nah, you're not. It's very, very, very challenging terrain, and there's really limited access, and that's why it's really hard to get into that backcountry, because the vegetation and forestry is so thick, and then you got bees and you got critters crawling around and hiding in there, and you just gotta be really careful, and there's a lot of hazards and dangers that go into crawling around in that thick brush. So it seems like you pour over some maps. Oh, I'm gonna go check this out. Jeff, I've done so much recon and like solo missions, hiking out, trying to find areas, and gotten myself into spots I should have never been in. And you'd have never known, that's just so, so thick and nasty in there.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes it, part of the fun of it, right? When you're glad you did it once it's over, but getting through all those alders and stuff, man, it's absolutely miserable, but it's the price you got to pay.
Yeah, I oftentimes go, well, check that off. I'm not going back there. I'm good.
Yeah, for sure.
No need to go back. No need to go back.
I did it. Well, you got a parting thought or anything to finish up?
Well, I guess I could just say, number one, thank you so much, sincerely from the bottom of my heart, for getting myself on and reaching out to the other guys with Alaska Wild Project, man. We really enjoyed our time spent with you when we did our podcast with you. It was really cool for you to reach out to us, being a fellow podcaster, and then being able to collaborate and kind of develop what I feel is the beginning of a really cool relationship between what you're doing and what we're doing, and just cool asking people connecting. I appreciate you shedding some light on our what we have going on and with your podcast, and I would say thank you for everything that you do for your community. You're a teacher. You got a lot of really cool stuff going on. A very positive, motivating guy, somebody to feed off of, and appreciate everything you're doing. And I guess that's all I really had to say is just thank you very much for having me on and getting the chance to talk with you. And man, anytime if you want to call, chat, and just talk hunting, fishing, just ask questions or just whatever, man. You're coming up here and you're gonna go do something and you just wanna get 2 cents on something, man. I'm more than available to you, man. You can call me anytime. And I love to talk that kind of stuff. So
I appreciate all that. That's great. All right. Thanks a lot, man. Absolutely. Where can people find you and the Alaska Wild Project and give the pitch for all that?
Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm pretty new to the social media scene. So, I do have an Instagram. I do have a Facebook. However, my Facebook really only got for, to use like Marketplace and Messenger for certain things. And I do have something kind of coming up that might be kind of cool. I'm dabbling around with doing Euro mounts right now. Pretty much done everything other than a muskox or an elk here in Alaska. So I'm dabbling on getting a business license and getting a Euro mount business started. It's going to be called Heads Up Euro Mounts. And so I've got that coming that I'm going to pretty much blast that on Instagram and Facebook here, probably come fall. I'm still finishing up some projects and fine tuning my skills to the point where I can, you know, confidently start taking on some clients and doing some customer stuff for them. So I got that coming pretty soon, but you can find me on Instagram, Brando_AWP. And then you can also connect with us at AlaskaWildProject.com, kick us an email. And so, yeah, that's pretty much where you can find me. I've pretty much always flew under the radar, Jeff. I've always kind of been kind of anti-social media, just kind of just stay out of that whole hubbub. But now that we're doing something that's something more on the social scene with the podcast and kind of, I guess, I say creating a character, I guess, to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like you have to promote through the social media platform. That's what life and it, that's what it is now, right?
Yeah.
That's what everybody's doing. Yeah. So yeah, I'd say hit me up on Instagram or check us out at AlaskaWildProject.com, and anybody can reach me through those channels. And I'm always down to chat it up with somebody, take an email or a phone call, and really just want to network and create relationships and expand on this. At some point I'd love to get out of my bubble of where I'm at in my career, and I'd love to make a career somewhere in this, in the podcast and outdoor life. And I mean, obviously it's very hard to do, but I'd love to transition into that. And that's something that is a goal of mine. So we'll see what happens, but yeah, thanks for asking on that part.
Cool. Thanks, man. It sounds great.
Yeah.
You know, go yeah. for it. We'll, I'm sure we'll be in touch.
And,
thanks for being on here, and we'll talk to you.
Sounds good, Jeff. Thanks a lot, man. You have a wonderful weekend, brother.
Hey, you too, man.
Okay, take care, Jeff. Talk to you soon.